You're listening to A Scary State, and this week we're covering Minnesota. So, Lauren?
Yes, Nora.
Let's get scary.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Minnesota. That's their accent.
That's their accent?
Yeah.
It has been a while since we've recorded. Nora and I both went on vacation.
We went to the beach, like, separately, but at the same time.
Which just worked perfectly with recording.
Yeah.
I went to Delaware.
I went to North Carolina.
And I took 900 pictures of things in Delaware to send to Nora.
It's crazy.
Like, there was the Henlopen Lighthouse replica that I sent Nora 500 times. And as we're leaving, my mom was like, do you want to take another picture? And I was like, no, Mom, I've done enough. And then at the beach, I saw the bathroom that said you can't change in the stalls, which was really weird, which was one of our facts.
I'm honestly like either I don't even know what's going on with that, but I definitely have never followed that rule.
Well, I think it's just law. In Delaware.
Yeah, but I mean, even in Delaware, when I would go there.
Breaking the law, Nora.
I know. Arrest me then.
But yeah, it was really fun. It did not feel like a week. And then I came back, and then I was sad.
I know, right? Same.
But, you know.
The struggle's real.
It really is. And then Joe, he's at the beach now, and he was like, oh, you're so lucky you went to the beach. And I was like, you're going to the beach. He's like, you just came back. I was like, yeah, I know, but it wasn't long enough.
Where's his bachelor party again?
Ocean City, Maryland.
Ocean City. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place. That'll be fun.
Yes. So they just left today. So now I'm with Mr. Roy Boy and it's just us chilling.
And Saturday is your bridal shower.
Yes, it is. Speaking of, oh my gosh. So listen to this. I ordered a dress. Super excited to order this dress. Mm-hmm. And Amazon tells me, they're like, oh, we delivered it to your mailbox. Great. Well, Joe has the mailbox key and he is in Maryland. So
we were like all brainstorming of like, how can Lauren get her dress? So Joe can either overnight you the key. You can go and get a copy.
He'll be sober enough to.
I know. Like, I don't. The percentage of that happening is close to zero.
Very slim. Very slim.
Or you could get a copy of the key from the post office, but the post office lady was a biatch.
Yeah, they were kind of actually really mean. So I'm going to try again tomorrow. And of course, all of this happens on a Thursday. And tomorrow is Friday. And the bridal shower is Saturday. So we have one day to get this done.
I do have that romper from Addison.
Oh!
That's an option.
Oh, that was cute.
I was supposed to give that to you months ago.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have it like with you?
No, I keep forgetting to bring it, but I could bring it Saturday, I guess.
Yeah, Mackenzie knows I get everywhere early. And she was like, yeah, so you know how your bridal shower starts at 1? I was like, yeah. She's like, get there at 1. And she's like, don't come early. I was like,
I know that must be very hard for you.
I know. I was like, I'm going to actually have to like think of how to be late.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, something like me and Lauren have so much in common, but something that we could not be more different is that Lauren is always early for things, like 30 plus minutes early, and I am always 30 plus minutes late.
Well, today, Nora, we're recording, and she's like, all right, I'm going to be there at 5:15. I said, awesome. And then she messages me. She goes, no, wait, I'm going to be there early. I'll be there at 4:45.
Which never, ever happens.
And then she gets here at 5.
Yeah. Well, the traffic, you know, the traffic in this area.
Oh, the traffic is horrible.
But still, like, yeah, I could have just said I was coming at staying at 5:15, but I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be early. Yeah, no. I tried and failed.
Well, I mean, I love your laugh. All right. So let's get into Minnesota. So Minnesota, nicknamed the Land of 10,000 Lakes, joined the Union on May 11th, 1858, and became the 32nd state in the U.S. Minnesota got its name from the Dakota Sioux word for the Minnesota River, which means sky-tinted water. Some interesting laws. If a wild boar gets loose in Minneapolis or St. Paul, the agriculture commissioner is required to capture or destroy it.
Hmm.
It is not permitted to eat hamburgers on a Sunday in St. Cloud. And you are not allowed to cross state lines with a duck on top of your head. Minnesota has 69,200 miles of rivers and streams. That is enough to circle the equator almost 3 times.
Wow.
And then the massive Mall of America. Have you ever been there?
I haven't, but as a child, like knowing that there was an amusement park in the mall, I like could not wrap my head around that as a kid.
I know. So it's located in Bloomington, which is arguably the biggest mall in North America. To walk around one level, you will walk 1.15 miles. And if you spent only 10 minutes inside of each store, it would take you 92 hours to visit every store.
Wow.
Yeah. The Halloween capital of the world is located in Anoka and is home to a ton of creepy and spooky things, which we might touch on later. And a movie I absolutely love, As Above, So Below, was directed by the Dowdy brothers, who grew up in Minnesota. Have you ever seen As Above, So Below?
I've never even heard of it.
So it's this awesome movie. I don't know why I love it so much. Joe, like, thinks it's mediocre, but I love it. It's about these people who go into the catacombs in Paris.
Ooh, it's so interesting.
It's so good. I would watch it.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, it's kind of not like found footage, but it's kind of like the videotaping thing, because they have like, you
like
know,
the Blair Witch Project?
Kind of. Yeah. But they have, like, the cameras on them, so it's so good.
Okay.
So watch it if you get a chance. I really love it.
Okay.
And then the smiley face killings theory, the smiley face killer, the theory actually began in Minnesota.
Huh.
So we might get into it one day. It's not primarily in Minnesota, but their theory began there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know that the Mississippi River actually starts at the very top of Minnesota and, like, goes all the way down Minnesota, like, all south?
I did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
That is really cool.
Like, why is it called the Mississippi River if it literally goes through the entire country? I'll never know.
All right, Sonora, what are you going to talk to us about?
Okay, so before I get started with my story, I just have to add that Minnesota is, like, super interesting for me. You know when something has an impact on you and then it always affects how you think of it?
Mm-hmm.
When I was 6, my dad got a job in Minnesota. And we were literally so close to moving there.
Oh my gosh.
Like, so close to the point where they were looking at houses. And my dad actually moved there and was living there. And we were planning on moving there. And I was super young. And then at the very last minute, he found a job back in this area and decided to take it.
Dang.
But I think, like, all the time how different my life would be if that had
so
happened.
Different.
Because, like, when you're that young moving somewhere, your roots are probably going to be there.
Yeah.
So,
dang, we wouldn't be here right now.
I know. Literally nothing would be.
No, it's that's just so weird.
Yeah. So it was meant to be to stay here.
Oh.
But my case this week is kind of similar to your Sean Sellers case in Oklahoma.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's similar. The story takes place in Red Lake, Minnesota, which is in the northern part of Minnesota. Red Lake is a remote area and is home to one of the poorest Native American tribes in the state. About 5,000 people live on the Red Lake Indian Reservation, and almost all of them are American Indians. The Red Lake Chippewa tribe itself has about 9,400 enrolled members, and the reservation is about 240 miles northwest of the Twin Cities. The town of Red Lake is about 75 miles south of Canada.
Okay.
So it's way up there.
Yeah.
A boy named Jeffrey Wees lived in this town. Jeffrey was 16 years old and didn't have the easiest childhood. Unfortunately, his father committed suicide in 1997, and his mother was in a nursing home since 1999 because she suffered a head injury in a car accident that was a result of her and her friend driving drunk. Which, in Indian reservations and, like, the Native American population, alcoholism is a huge issue.
Yeah.
Because people don't have, like, their sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that more.
And wait, how old was the guy when all this happened?
So he was very young when this happened.
Oh.
Very early childhood.
Okay.
So he doesn't have many memories with his parents. But so he lost both of his parents, and he had been living on and off with his 58-year-old grandfather, Daryl Lussier, who went by the name Dash. And then his 32-year-old girlfriend, Michelle.
Okay.
I know. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Jeff was definitely a bit of an outsider. He was a quiet guy and would routinely wear a long black trench coat, eyeliner, and combat boots.
Mm.
I mean, I can remember in high school one or two guys that wore the long black trench coat, and I was like, I will never piss that guy off because I will die.
There was always, like, a school that had that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I went to a concert once. I can't remember the band that was playing, but their guitarist, like their bassist or whatever, was wearing like that whole outfit.
Oh my gosh.
And he had his face painted white, and he had like his eyes blacked out and a black X on his forehead and his hair up. I don't know why, but looking at him was the scariest thing. And like, I can handle scary. Like, I don't know what it was, but watching this man terrified me.
That is very scary.
Yeah, it was real creepy.
If that wasn't kind of sketchy enough, he would also sculpt his hair into devil horns. Like, he would use, like, gel or something and make horns on the side of his head to look like the devil.
Okay.
I found a picture of it.
That one?
I will post it.
Okay.
I just couldn't believe, like, just the picture. I was like, what is going
on?
So due to this and his overall appearance and manner, Jeff's classmates described him as weird and scary.
I mean, you know.
The devil horn does it.
No,
like,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's a little creepy.
Yeah. He would draw pictures of skulls and swastikas on his notebooks and create comic books with drawings of people shooting each other. I mean, he was doing this, like, in class.
And did teachers, like...
Oh, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So some of his classmates did know about his troubled childhood, but some of them, that didn't stop them from teasing him.
Aww.
Which, they're crazy. Why would you tease this boy? Like, yeah. Clearly he has some things going on. If he's drawing swastikas on his notebook and wearing a trench coat, devil horns, like, no.
And also just, like, don't be mean to people.
Exactly. Like, just don't do that.
Except, you know, we're saying, okay, but no, he's a bad person, so that's why
he's a bad person. That's why I'm doing that.
Exactly.
Because normally I would feel bad, but he's a bad person.
Okay, yes.
Okay, so even though Jeff was quiet at school, he definitely was not quiet online. Online, he was a self-proclaimed Nazi and would go to a neo-Nazi website and express admiration for Hitler.
Oh my gosh.
He called himself Todesangel, which is German for angel of death.
Good.
In one posting, he criticized interracial mixing on the Indian reservation he lived on, and he slammed fellow Indian teens for listening to rap music. He would say, "We have kids my age killing each other over things as simple as a fight, and it's because of the rap influence," which is so funny because he literally puts his hair in devil horns.
Yeah, and has swastikas and is a Nazi.
Exactly. So reportedly, his posts on these websites were also, like, sloppy and full of typos, which doesn't shock me.
No, not shocking at all.
But Jeff also published online stories about zombies. His Hotmail email linked him to frequent postings on one internet forum called Rise of the Dead, a site where contributors collaborate on stories about, quote, average people attempting to survive a zombie-infested world, end quote.
Do you think you'd be able to survive a zombie-infested world?
Absolutely not.
No, me either.
Absolutely not.
See, but we would live – okay, if we have Walking Dead zombies, we live in the trees. We make, like, tree houses because they can't climb.
That would be great. I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could just jump. I would be a squirrel. I would just jump from tree to tree. I would never come down.
Oh, my God. I can picture that.
Jeff posted under the handle Blades11 and appeared to be a regular contributor to numerous fan fiction sites related to zombies. On the website, he wrote, quote, "I'm a fan of zombie films, have been for years, as well as a fan of horror movies in general. I like to write horror stories, read about Nazi Germany and history, and someday I plan on moving out of the U.S.
Okay.
So,
to Germany?
Yeah, I'm guessing. I know. He's like 70 years too late. But
yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. In 2004, when Jeff was 15 years old, he created and posted a violent, blood-soaked video online that included an animated character shooting four people and blowing up a police car before committing suicide, according to the Smoking Gun. He also used the alias Regret when he posted a 30-second online animation entitled Target Practice.
All of these are just huge, flashing red flags.
Yes. That's what I'm trying to get at. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
Jeff posted a second short called Clown several weeks after uploading Target Practice to a popular multimedia website. The 50-second clown short ends with one character apparently being strangled by the clown.
Good.
Ugh.
Do you remember the summer all the clowns attacked?
Oh, wait, what?
Well, they didn't attack, but when all the clowns were, like, that one summer when there were all these clowns and they would, like, hide around, they would hold knives and stuff and they would scare people.
I didn't know about this.
Oh my gosh, this was, like, a couple years ago. I think it was, like, 5-6 years ago.
Where we went to school?
No, just, like, around, at least in Virginia, people were, like, reporting seeing clowns all over the place, and some people were being chased by them, and some had, like, they would just stand off in the distance with knives and stuff.
I never knew about this.
Yeah.
At our school that we went to, there was an issue with a clown. But that's
really
all I know about. Yeah, like a clown hiding and scaring people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe it was during that
I think it was after you graduated.
Oh, yeah. So then it would have been 2016.
Yeah. Wow.
Huh.
Maybe.
Yeah, that was like the weird clown phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Community activist Audrey Thayer runs several ACLU, which is the American Civil Liberties Union, offices, and says that somewhere along the line, Jeff was lost, which is clear.
Yeah.
At this point, Jeff had not been in school for several months. He was expelled for violating school rules and was in a program that provided in-home tutoring. And clearly, he was spending way too much time online creating disturbing content. Police say it's unclear where Jeff was living, and a member of his extended family says it seems like he was floating on his own with no adults watching out for him, and he was only 16 at this time.
Dang.
Around this time, he was also suffering from depression and was taking medications, like an antidepressant.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a week after his medication dosage was adjusted, Jeff did something unthinkable. On March 21st, 2005, Jeff shot his grandfather, Dash, with a 22-millimeter pistol while he was sleeping.
No.
Jeff is believed to have possessed the pistol for as long as a year before the shooting.
And how old is he at this point?
16. He's still 16.
How did he get that?
Well, his grandfather was a police officer on the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
So they suspect that he stole the gun from him, but, like, how was that not reported?
Yeah,
like,
right?
Why wouldn't they? Like, it just seems so weird that he could get away with that.
Yeah.
Dash had four adult children and two younger than 10, age 10.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Naranjo, a retired Bureau of Indian Affairs officer who worked with Dash, described him as a man who helped maintain order during periods of turmoil and unrest on the reservation. Ed goes to say that, quote, he was that kind of individual who would calm a very hot situation. Apparently not that one, but yeah. In general.
Yeah.
He just projected that feeling, end quote. Jeff then stole Dash's two police-issue weapons, a 9mm Glock and a pump-action shotgun. So now he has three weapons. But he took those two weapons with him, and he shot Michelle Sigana, who was the girlfriend of his grandpa.
Oh my gosh.
When she returned home later that same day. Michelle was only 32 years old. Some reports stated that she was Dash's police partner.
Okay.
But then other reports stated that she was a cashier at Seven Clans Casino in nearby Thief River Falls. I mean, it's not a big detail, but I mean, couldn't figure out. Yeah, I couldn't figure out.
Could you be partners with someone if you're dating them?
Exactly. That's why I was like, that's kind of interesting. I don't know what happened there, but the madness doesn't stop there.
I didn't think it would.
Then Jeff drove his grandfather's squad car to Red Lake High School, where he used to attend, and arrived around 2:45 p.m. Passing through the building's main entrance, he encountered unarmed security guard Derek Brunn, who was manning the school's metal detector. Jeff fatally shot 28-year-old Derek. He was the first person inside the school to be killed. He was remembered as a gentle spirit. He was just an all-around good guy. His cousin Nancy Richards added that he was the type of person who would open his door to anyone who needed a place to stay. According to Richards, Brunn was a police officer and was taking classes to be an emergency medical technician.
Oh,
I know. He had a daughter named Courtney who passed away at 4 years old. So his family stated that they had comfort knowing that he was with her. Once Jeff got past security, he proceeded down a hallway firing at students, killing 5 students and a teacher and injuring 7 others. So I'm going to just tell you a little bit about each of the victims,
mm-hmm.
just because I feel like we should recognize them.
Yeah.
So Dwayne Lewis was 15. He was a passionate basketball player who played point guard in his 9th grade team. According to his mom's cousin, Dwayne was outgoing and he would talk to anyone and had a lot of friends. Chase Lushier was 15 years old. According to friends, he was helping care for a son who had been born just months before the shooting.
Oh,
I know. He tried to balance that responsibility with playing basketball, doing his homework, and spending time with his friends.
God, I can't even imagine.
I know. He was known as being a typical teenager who loved his newborn baby.
Oh.
And you know what's so crazy real quick?
Hmm.
So Lushier is the same last name as Jeff's grandfather. So I don't know if there was a relation there or if that was like a common last name. I couldn't find any detail, but I just thought that was so interesting. Like that could have been a relative of
Jeff's.
That
is really interesting.
So then Chanel Rosebear was 15 years old. And according to Minneapolis St. Paul Star Tribune, Chanel was a 9th grader and the third of several children. Her father, Kevin Martin, said Chanel was a strong basketball player also who planned to hone her skills at a basketball camp over the summer. Alicia White was 14 years old and was the oldest of 6 children who lived with her ill grandmother. According to friends, Alicia was a cheerful girl who played basketball at school for the freshman team. So like a lot of basketball players.
Yeah.
She played the role of mother and helped her grandmother raise her younger siblings.
Oh.
I know.
Do you think... Did school just get out by the time he went? Because it could be all the people who were like after school for sports.
That's a very good point because it was like after three in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So it had to be. And they were all like around the same age too.
Yeah.
It was all freshmen. So that's a good point. Well, almost all freshmen. Thurlene Stilday was 15 years old and came from a big family, and she was one of four girls and a boy and looked forward to doing good things in high school. And then finally, Nava Rogers was a 62-year-old English teacher at Red Lake High School, and she was an advisor to the yearbook and student newspaper staff. Rogers, who had left the community for several years, returned to Red Lake 6 years prior. According to her daughter, Cindy Anderson, she made a point when students had personal difficulties to be someone they could talk to, and students did talk to her a lot. They trusted her. So back to Jeff. Witnesses say that he smiled and waved as he shot at people.
That's disgusting.
I just picture, like, his little face with those horns.
Yeah, that's horrible.
I know. One witness said he asked a victim if they believed in God before killing them. There was a room of students hiding from the gunfire, and they were pretty much, like, sitting ducks for Jeff because he entered the room and started shooting everywhere.
Oh, my God.
And there were quite a bit. I think it said, like, 10 students were injured. So, like, he shot more than just the people who passed away.
Yeah.
FBI Special Agent Paul McCabe stated that at some point, Jeff returned to the entrance where he had opened fire and engaged in a brief shootout with police. The shootout ended when he retreated to a classroom because he had been shot in the hip and a leg by at least two bullets. He then turned the gun on himself and ended his life. So Jeff ended up killing 9 people that day whose lives were cut way too short.
Mm-hmm.
Investigators are not sure exactly what set Jeff off, but fellow students at Red Lake say they saw what like looked like warning signs now that they think back on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this actually, this whole story kind of reminds me of the Virginia Tech shooting, because that shooter went to my high school.
Oh, yeah. I remember you saying that.
He would do super similar things to Jeff. In English class, he wrote like a poem that was like really disturbing and like nothing was ever done. Things like that with this Virginia Tech shooter.
Yeah.
And so that seems to be a common theme with like young people who do mass shootings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, there's always the warning signs that you notice after something
exactly.
happens.
About a month before the shooting, he made a sketch of a guitar strumming skeleton accompanied by a caption that read, "Till your boots fill with blood." And it was displayed in his English class, just like the Virginia Tech shooter, which happened later. And classmate Partston Grades Jr. said that he was thinking about that picture shortly after the shooting. He said, quote, "I thought that was him letting everyone know," end quote, and that he was going to do something. Graves said Jeff had also shown him comic books that he had drawn filled with well-crafted images of people shooting each other.
Yeah.
And he said it was metal stuff. It was sick. Okay, did you tell anyone? Like, I don't know, because clearly, if anyone was told, no one did anything.
No one did a thing.
So Jeff was allowed to have a photo of a skeleton with the caption, "Till your boots fill with blood," in his English class. He made his hair into devil horns. I can't get over that. He was clearly seeing a psychiatrist because his depression meds were being managed and the dosage was adjusted a week prior to the shooting. And yet no one took any warning signs seriously. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Audrey Thayer from the ACLU said that, quote, "When a youth acts out in an inappropriate manner, such as what happened in Red Lake, my heart goes out to what happened. Where was the disconnect for Jeff? That's no placing blame on anyone. There was a disconnect. Something happened. What could we have done differently? I keep thinking about his losses. Was he left out there? Sure was. Was it anyone's fault? No, it's just reality," end quote. And I mean, I get where she's coming from. Because it's not really anyone's fault, but as a community, someone should have recognized
it. Yeah, there were signs.
Yeah. Troy Truer said that there's a lot of American Indian kids who feel disconnected and not like saying that's an excuse, but clearly there's not enough resources going towards them.
Yeah.
And a lot of their parents, they have alcohol problems. I mean, almost like so many stories. There's a parent with alcohol problems like in an Indian reservation. And Troy also teaches in the American Indian Studies program at Bemidji State University. And he said that it's clear Jeff was deeply troubled and that many Indian kids are lost in searching. He said, quote, "Kids looking for something. They don't even know what it is themselves and couldn't put a label on it," end quote. Truer says he hopes the Red Lake shooting won't simply be a tragic memory, but an opportunity to reach out to a generation searching for a place to belong.
That is an intense one.
Yeah, it was intense, but I felt like I had to talk about it. It's just crazy. It happened only 5 years after Columbine.
I think it influenced it.
Yeah, for sure. And then it was just a couple years before the Virginia Tech shooting.
When was that one?
The Virginia Tech one was in 2007, and this one was in 2005.
Where in Minnesota would you guys have moved?
Minneapolis.
Oh, so that's not like...
No.
Okay.
This was like way north. Minneapolis is... Yeah, it was 2007. But yeah, Minneapolis is, I think, in like the center of the state.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, you know, you could have been really close to it.
That's true.
All right. Well, for mine, I'm going to talk about something.
Oh.
So the Halloween capital of the world, like I mentioned, mm-hmm. is located in no state other than Minnesota. This place is called Anoka in Minnesota. So on the main website for Anoka, and I looked up how to spell, like how to say this, so I know this is right. Anoka.
I heard it, and it's right.
There is a Halloween countdown. And so, you know, as of August 19th, when we are recording this, there are 72 days until Halloween. So the town of Anoka is known for a number of haunted locations and ghost stories, which is what gave it its name, the most haunted city in Minnesota. The town of Anoka was founded in 1844 and has a small population of only about 17,142 people based on a census from 2010, and it is in the northern suburb of the Twin Cities. Some of the main roads that go through Anoka are Highway 10, Highway 169, and State Highway 47. So in 1920, Anoka hosted one of the very first Halloween parades, which is how it ultimately got the nickname as the Halloween capital of the world.
Whoa.
So every year, the town celebrates the holiday with several parades that include candy and costumes. They also have pumpkin carving contests, 5Ks, costume contests, and much more. So this all came about because back then, the local kids were being little shits on Halloween. They would vandalize the area, let cows loose, soap up people's windows.
Oh my gosh.
So I guess that means like legit taking like a bar of soap, like rubbing it on a window.
Because it's really hard to clean that off.
Yeah, or it like makes it like grimier. I don't know. And they would tip over outhouses. So they would do this on like
Ew.
Halloween. I know, disgusting.
Those little twerps.
I know. So the town was sick of this, and they decided that on Halloween, the town would throw a huge Halloween party that would include a parade and a costume contest, and every kid who participated would get candy and popcorn. Mm-hmm. So this tradition just stuck. So I want to go visit this town around Halloween.
It sounds so cool.
But a really interesting fact that I found was in 1970, the winners of the TV show The Dating Game won a trip to Anoka to ride in the Halloween parade. So why is this interesting, you may ask?
Why?
Well, an infamous serial killer named Rodney Alcala appeared on that show in 1978.
I know that case.
And yep, he actually won. But The Bachelorette, a woman named Carol Bradshaw, refused to go on a date with him because she found him to be creepy.
Yeah.
He ended up murdering like 8 women after that. And he was known
I didn't
as,
know she was on The Bachelorette.
Well, she was the Bachelorette of the show.
Oh, okay. that makes sense.
Yeah, so she was the one who was like asking the guys questions, and Rodney was one of the ones who was like, you know, answering the questions, and she
That's
liked his
crazy.
Answers the most.
Yeah,
so she met him afterwards and was like, I'm not going on a date with him. He was creepy.
Yeah.
And then he killed like 8 women or something and got the nickname the Dating Game Killer. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a really interesting fact. So most of the buildings in this small town are haunted, so I decided to go into some of them. So first we have the Anoka State Hospital. So the hospital was built in 1989 along the Rum River and opened its doors in 1900. It acted as a transfer asylum, which meant that it took in patients from the receiving hospitals in the state. And it was actually the first asylum in the state of Minnesota, giving it the name, the first state asylum for the insane. It operated under that name from 1900 to 1919. The hospital was meant to be a place where patients would live out their lives. The plan wasn't for the patients to just get treated and be sent off. Mm-hmm. It was a place where they would live, grow, kind of get treated as they're living there. That year, the hospital admitted 100 mentally ill men who were from St. Peter State Hospital. These men were described by their psychiatrists as, quote, chronic incurables. Yeah, this was described as men who had lost their minds from their environment or from hereditary causes. The hospital continued to grow in its first few years, and in 1915, the first female patients were admitted. So the hospital tried to take a nice approach to have, like, to this increasing number of patients, and they wanted to structure the hospital in a way that would be, like, pleasant. So this mm-hmm. was known as the cottage plan. So it was pretty much a way to make the hospital feel homey and not like an institute. So cottages were to be built, trees, rivers, meadows would be added, it would be a calm mm-hmm. environment, it would look like a cute little town.
Yeah.
Well, of course, these plans are never used. And it's unknown why they were never used. They were drawn up, they were ready, and just
they
never
were
used.
Mysteriously missing.
Mysteriously missing. In 1917, the hospital had completed some version of this cottage plan. They had built buildings that would house about 50 patients. In 1919, the hospital was renamed the Anoka State Asylum as a way to make it sound less intimidating, which still sounds kind of intimidating.
That backfired.
Yeah, right?
That sounds scary.
Yeah, it does. Soon, the hospital was housing over 1,000 patients, usually around 1,300, where it was only equipped to house about 900. Then in 1920, an influenza outbreak spread through the hospital and 176 patients lost their lives. Mm-hmm. And then in 1937, the hospital changed its name again to Anoka State Hospital. In 1946, the population of the asylum had reached 1,340 patients. 71 of those patients were on parole and 2 had already escaped. But not surprisingly, the hospital quickly got a bad reputation. The hospital lacked the appropriate number of workers and doctors that were needed to adequately care for the patients. So patients were often neglected, as it seems every asylum.
Yeah.
That wasn't the only problem, though. Cruelty at the hands of the caretakers was a very common practice, as well as the treatment that the patients received being pretty horrendous and controversial. If the patients were considered to be a threat, they would be restrained by hospital staff. Their restraints weren't humane either. Can you believe it? This included leather straps, straitjackets, manacles, which are like metally arm wrist thingies.
Yeah, like restraining things.
Yeah, and other horrible types of restraints. Other horrible treatments that the patients endured were electroshock therapy, hydrotherapy, and lobotomies. And I go into a lot of detail about all of those in our Virginia episode of St. Albans. Mm-hmm. So the hospital actually purchased machines that were used to give the shock treatments, which is like really gross. Over 91 lobotomies were performed here, with 15 of those being bilateral frontal lobotomies. Out of those 15, 2 patients were cured and were able to return home, and some showed signs of improvement from their conditions. But the lobotomies, as is common, usually killed more people than it cured, and at least 2 people died from failed lobotomies.
Wow.
The hospital saw a lot of death, and the patients who died while being treated were simply buried in a grave marked with a simple number. Over 80 of the original 100 men who were first admitted to the hospital were buried here in those unmarked graves. And okay, so what's really sweet, many years later, some individuals actually researched each patient that was buried on the property and eventually were able to properly bury each one with a name and a headstone, which is really sweet.
That's so nice.
So the graveyard is still open to the public and you can walk around.
Wow.
The rest of the building's like super boarded up, but the graveyard's open. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So we talked about the dangerous patients. Mm-hmm. While the less dangerous patients, who weren't restrained, were able to just roam around the grounds, which included underground tunnels. But these tunnels, which were apparently used to connect different parts of the hospital, were set up like a maze and were all too easy and all too common for patients to get lost in. Most of these patients would get so frightened and hopeless while being lost that they felt their only escape was suicide, and many died from suicide by hanging themselves from the pipes that line the ceilings.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And there are still scratch marks visible on the concrete walls from those who were lost within the tunnels.
Oh, that's like my worst nightmare, is being stuck somewhere.
Watch as above, so below. Rumors quickly spread of the haunted tunnels and what one would experience while down there. Footsteps and whispers were said to be heard, as well as bursts of laughter. Cold spots would appear and pleading voices would be heard. It got so bad that many hospital employees refused to travel down in the tunnels at all.
Okay, I understand that.
Yeah. Many of the workers said that the tunnels always had an unwelcoming feel to them. They felt like they shouldn't be there and that they were trespassing. So, a little side note, I was looking for more information about the tunnels, and I read about a beast that is believed to roam around Anoka and may have even made its way into the tunnels at one point. So it's known as the Linwood Woolly Beast. Literally nothing is known about this creature other than what I just said about where it goes. That it's white, moose-sized, and has the head of a goat. Some people believe that it's been mistaken for like an albino deer. That's literally all I could find about this thing.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, a little cryptid I can talk about. Nope, literally a paragraph
maybe
about
this
animal.
Maybe that's what it was an albino deer.
Maybe.
Who knows?
We saw an albino deer when we moved into our house. When we first moved in. Not this one. My parents' house.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense because there's woods all behind there.
Yeah. So from 1948 to 1967, the hospital was still being used as an asylum for the mentally ill, but it was also being used as a tuberculosis treatment center because every place seems to have tuberculosis.
Yeah.
In the early 1970s, the hospital was instead used as a program center for emotionally disturbed children and adolescents. Then in 1985, the hospital changed its name once more to what it is known as today, which is the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. It remained open for 99 years under many different names, closing its doors finally in 1999. The grounds of the campus are still open and visitors are able to walk around the grounds, but the actual building is closed. Mm-hmm. And since the hospital has been repurposed, only maintenance workers are allowed to be in the tunnels. One worker reportedly went down into the tunnels with a recorder to see what they could get, knowing it was haunted. Mm-hmm. They recorded a voice saying, "Get out." Laughter and whispers have been reported to have also been heard in the tunnels. Voices are heard in the basement, apparitions are seen in the attic windows, and footsteps are heard all over. So I found a story. I wanted to find like people's experiences in these tunnels. Mm-hmm. So I found one girl's experience, and I found it on a creepypasta fandom page. So I can't tell you how true it is.
Yeah.
But so in 2005, this girl and her boyfriend Max got the opportunity to go to the asylum at night. Mm-hmm. Max was a volunteer with the fire department, and help was needed to patrol the asylum. Mm-hmm. So since he was like a well-trusted volunteer, they let him go by himself, which makes no sense, but whatever. No. So it was closed down at this point and had a problem with vandals. So Max was chosen for the patrol and brought along his girlfriend.
I would never.
Right? Nothing too remarkable happened, but as they were exploring some of the old rooms, they went into a room that had scratch marks in the back corner of the room, like someone was trying to escape from the back corner. They also saw scratch marks 9 feet up off the ground, like 9 feet up on the wall. So that's like scary, yeah. Unnaturally high. As they were leaving, the light in the hall shut off completely, leaving the two with only their flashlights for light. Then they immediately ran outside. But she said this was like super creepy and she would never return. And I was like, well, I wouldn't have gone in the first place.
Yeah.
So the next place I'm going to talk about is the Anoka Masonic Lounge and Colonial House. Colonial Hall. The Anoka Masonic Lounge and its neighbor Colonial Hall are both reported as being haunted. There are so many books written about the Masonic Lounge. Is that how you pronounce it, Masonic?
Masonic, I think.
Masonic?
Yeah, Masonic.
So there's a lot written about the lounge, but nothing online about the lounge, like, that I can read online. It's only in books that you have to order.
Huh.
So I didn't have time to buy them, so I'm just going to talk about the Colonial Hall.
Yeah.
So Colonial Hall, a beautiful 17-room building, was constructed in 1904. The lodge was next door, and that was built in 1922. The house was built and designed by Dr. Allenson Aldrich and his wife, Dr. Flora Aldrich. They became prominent members of the community and were apparently just really cool people. Dr. Flora actually became the first woman doctor from Anoka. She was also a suffragist and involved in a lot of local clubs and organizations, so she was just like a really cool kick-ass woman.
Nice.
She unfortunately died on March 21st, 1921, in the hall after a short illness. Her husband passed away later that year. They never had children, so after their passing, Colonial Hall was returned to the city of Anoka. An addition was made onto the house, which then became the lodge. Mm-hmm. So these two buildings then became the museum and offices for the Anoka County Historical Society. The society has since moved, and it's been taken over by a different, like, building. Mm-hmm. But when the society was still located there, employees would smell cigar smoke, which nothing in the area would explain that smell, and smoking mm-hmm. wasn't even allowed. Others claimed to have seen the Aldrich's beloved hunting dogs running around the property. Upstairs, there's a ball of yarn with two needles sticking out of it as like an exhibit. Mm-hmm. Employees often find the two needles on the floor next to the yarn the next morning. So each night, the employees make sure that the needles are firmly tucked into the yarn, only for the needles to appear on the floor the next morning. So one employee got so frustrated with this that she decided to be the last one out there that night to tuck in the needles. So she did that, tucked them in really well, locked up the room. Mm-hmm. So the next morning, she returned first thing in the morning, and the needles again were on the floor. So at that moment, she declared that if the needles appeared on the floor again, she would quit. Well, guess what? The needles have not come out of the yarn again.
Wow.
Green and blue mists are also seen around the building. An antique store named the Artique moved into the building after the Historical Society moved out. The women who run this store have reported that they'll find the lights have been left on after they know they turned them off and doors have shut on their own. An 80-pound antique mirror will also end up in a new spot in a new room every morning. That is one strong ghost.
Yeah.
So that's that with that. And so now we're going to...
Told you. Can you keep that in? That was so good.
So then we have Billy's Bar and Grill. So the original building was built in 1877 at 214 Jackson Street in Anoka and was known as Anoka Hotel, which was later renamed to the Jackson Hotel. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, part of the hotel was an upscale French building, as well as one of the buildings being used as an unofficial brothel. This brothel was run by a woman named Miss Jackson, which just seems to make so much sense. Miss Jackson died while in this brothel, either at the hands of the prostitutes, their words not mine, who worked there, or thieves, or even by suicide. But official records have been found, apparently, that state that Miss Jackson died of pneumonia in a nearby town. So who knows? Guests have reported seeing a ghost in the form of a woman who haunts the upstairs and is usually seen in the upstairs window, where it's believed that she hung herself.
Yeah.
And it's believed to be Miss Jackson. In 1880...
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought of. In 1884, the hotel was impacted by the Great Anoka Fire in August of that year. It was restored and was able to reopen in 1885. But everything wasn't perfect after that. A murder occurred on the sidewalk right in front of the newly restored hotel later that year. Peter Gross was shot in the back by his friend, W.F. Merrick, right there on the sidewalk. He died only 20 hours later in one of the upstairs rooms of the hotel. In 1987, the building became solely Billy's Bar and Grill. The current bartender, Randy Barber, has some of his own stories. He said that some machines will behave strangely, the temperature will unexpectedly drop, and ghosts and apparitions have been seen on the stairs. Waitresses will also be rewarded for doing things right and working well. I know that sounds gross, but it's not. Yeah. It has been reported that they'll leave at night, and when they come back the next morning, someone or something has set all of the tables for them.
Wow.
Which is, like, super sweet.
That is really cool.
When I was a server, it would have been cool if a ghost would, like, roll all the silverware for us.
That's a kind of reward we like.
Right. But there are a few rules that must be followed at Billy's Bar and Grill. People must travel in twos around the bar. He said that no one goes upstairs or into the basement alone.
I don't like that.
No. And people have reported being scared and creeped out when being alone, which is why they're always with, like, a buddy. The Anoka Paranormal Investigations Group investigated this property. Founder Ross Beard headed the investigation. The group came prepared with many different pieces of ghost hunting equipment. Beard said that in order to have a successful investigation, one needs to be aware of the different types of haunts. Mm-hmm. So his quote was pretty cool. So it says, quote, residual happens whether you are there or not and has no effect on you whatsoever. Number two, intelligent interactive. These are the ones that everybody loves because when we ask a question, we get an answer. Third type, poltergeist. Movement, move something, it moved the glass across the table. Fourth one, demonic. Don't like to talk about that one a lot, but demonic is important. The last one is shadow people. It scares people to death. I know. The group believes that, while in a room that used to be part of the hotel, they experienced the spirit of a little girl. She faintly said, quote, sing to me, when the group asked if she liked to play the game Ring Around the Rosie.
I would be like, get away from me.
Yeah, please leave. As three members of the group were coming up the stairs from the basement, they heard loud stomping as if someone were chasing them up the stairs. So that's truly the childhood terror of, like, when you turn off the lights in your basement and sprint upstairs before anything can get you.
Yeah, for real.
Oh. Beard has also reported that he has seen a lady in white walking throughout the dining room both during the day and at night. She will be seen sitting at a table, then will suddenly disappear. So literally, people will just be chilling, eating food, and they'll look over, see this woman, and then they look over again, and she just vanishes. Other hauntings that have been reported at this bar are... people have reported seeing shadowy figures and seeing pictures moving on the walls. Others have reported seeing an apparition of a woman walk through the bar. And a redheaded spirit is seen peeking out of the window on the third floor. So the last building, kind of the last building I'll talk about, is the Anoka Historical Society. So the Historical Society offers walking ghost tours provide a nice tour and history of all of the many haunted buildings and places all around Anoka. The tour starts at their main building, where a rocking chair is said to rock on its own. So it gets you into the spooky spirit.
Yeah.
The tour also stops at 320 Madison Street, which is supposedly haunted by Sam Starrett, a Civil War veteran. It is said that his ghost likes to move his portrait around the house to different locations. Another stop is made to a white Victorian-era house. It was owned by Colonel Paul Giddings, who died in the house in 1930. It is believed he likes to keep an eye on the house. So one story is that one night, the current owner of the house said she was led into the basement by the ghost of the colonel. This is when she noticed a gas smell and immediately called the gas company. Had the ghost not led her there and had she not called the gas company immediately, her and her family could have died by carbon monoxide poisoning or from the furnace exploding.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that cool?
That's so crazy.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And I can understand the frustration of gas leaks.
Yeah.
Another house is located on 3rd Avenue, and it's known that anybody who is anybody has lived there. Well, now there is a ghost who resides there who doesn't like it when people wear shoes in the house. I don't know what happens when people wear shoes in the house. That's all it said.
Wow.
The armory has had reports of the sound of marching soldiers. And Mary Vanderland, the owner of the costume shop called Party Papers, has reported hearing footsteps and floorboards creaking in the shop. Items have also flown off the shelves in weird and unexplained ways. Mary has a friend who is a sensitive and said that the ghost who lives here told her about a time long ago. The ghost described that the store was owned by an old-timey storekeeper. The old shopkeeper was bald and wore long-sleeved shirts with cuff protectors.
Same.
He is sleeping in nearby sidewalk near a window that read mercantile.
Mercantile.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Bellows is the owner of a historic house that is located on Van Buren Street. This house is also on the tour.
Bellows, there's a Van Buren Street in Virginia.
I feel like there's a Van Buren Street like everywhere.
It's wild.
Wild. Bellows believes that the spirit of a young mischievous boy hangs around this house. He said that the spirit seems to be interested in modern day technology and gadgets. Velu said that when the house gets too quiet, they're worried that the spirit has left because they don't want him to leave. So these are just a few of the places I decided to cover that are haunted in Anoka. Maybe it really is one of the most haunted cities in Minnesota.
In Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Love it.
But yeah, I like found that town about like the Halloween's like, you know, yeah. place. And I was like, well, this is really cool.
I want to go there.
I want to go there too. Anything that has like a Halloween festival or a super yeah. Halloween, I just love.
I'm so excited for fall. I'm like ready to go to Hobby Lobby and buy fall stuff.
Stop. Oh my God. Last year, Joe and I went to Target. I had to return a pair of pants. Mm-hmm. One single pair of pants is what mm-hmm. we were going to return. And then we were going to leave. No. I returned the pair of pants and then I walked around, which was my first mistake. We left $200 later with a cart full of Halloween things.
See, that's why I can't, like, I can't have, you know how CVS's will be in Targets now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I literally cannot, I cannot have my prescriptions delivered to those CVS's because I will literally shop and buy things I don't need.
I will too, because there's that little dollar section. So yeah. You walk around the little dollar section and then you just like, you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to walk over to the home section.
I know.
And then it's just Magnolia all downhill. Home. Ugh, but it just struggle. It all goes downhill from there.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening this week. Hopefully you learned a little more about, you know, Minnesota.
Minnesota. Do you think people hate when people say that? Like people from Minnesota, you know, hate probably, when people do the accent?
Probably, but you know what? We gotta do it.
We gotta.
We gotta do it.
Oh my God.
So yeah, make sure to follow us on our social media. We have an Instagram called A Scary State Podcast, and we have a Facebook page.
Follow us.
Yeah, follow us everywhere.
And then, like we keep saying, please send us your scary stories to ascarystatepodcast@gmail.com. We will read them on the podcast one day.
Yes. So guys, do you have anything else?
Nope.
All right. Okay. Okay, guys. Stay scary.
Stay safe.
Bye. Hey everyone, have you ever had the idea to start your own podcast but had no idea where to start? We had no idea either until we found Buzzsprout.
It is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Buzzsprout has made our experience with podcasting both fun and stress-free by listing our show on all major podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, just to name a few.
You'll get a great-looking podcast website, audio players that you can drop into other websites, detailed analytics to see how and where people are listening, tools to promote your episodes, and much more.
Following the link in the show notes, lets Buzzsprout know we sent you, gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan, and helps support our show.
Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout.
And remember to stay scary.
Stay safe.